You're listening to the Looseheads podcast. Join the movement.
Let's get people talking about mental health.
And together we will tackle the stigma. This is the Looseheads podcast.
So hello and welcome to the Looseheads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union with myself, Chris Hill. And it's another week, which means it's another podcast with the three legends of Looseheads that are Dave Nicol, Mark Shotton and Rob Shotton. And guys, we're getting back into the rhythm of these podcasts. It feels like series two is coming alive a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. We're not legends, though, I don't think.
I think you are.
Yeah, I'll take that.
And I think when we have been doing these podcasts, they've become a lot more slicker. The Zoom calls are becoming more frequent at the moment. The WhatsApp group's popping up with all sorts of ideas, which has been great. But Mark, your build-up to this podcast involved a bit of a cheese and wine night last night, didn't it? So how's the head this morning?
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that, Chris. Yeah, not good at all. So, like you know, we've all got day jobs, and my day job is running a financial services business. So we had a very posh cheese and wine Zoom last night. I didn't realise quite how alcoholic it would be until I looked at how many bottles weren't left this morning. So yeah, a bit fragile. I'm a lightweight when it comes to drinking anyway, and I drank 2.5 bottles last night. That's probably my annual intake of wine.
Can we just say that you are turning into everything that you hate?
Oh, I know. Do you know what? You're dead right. Yeah, they even had breakout groups in this Zoom thing. And quite frankly, when I got into my breakout group, I was pissed. So, I it wasn't good. You're right. I'm turning into, guilty as charged. Only an elderly edge, you know.
So very trashy, that, Mark. So very trashy. Listen, we love having a bit of a laugh on these podcasts. And as we just said there, and I'm really excited to introduce our next guest to is currently waiting in the wings to join our chat while he's listening to our ramblings. But of course, the primary reason why we do these podcasts is to increase awareness surrounding mental health. And it's great that Talking Rugby Union can link up with Looseheads to do this. And last week's guest, Chris Robshaw, who claimed throughout the podcast that he wasn't an open book, was so open and honest with us about sort of how he was affected by the fallout from the 2015 World Cup and all that came with it. So if you do get a chance to listen to that, please do. It was a fascinating chat with Chris. And we've had some really interesting chats with some top internationals across Series 2 so far. And I'm pretty sure the same can be said today about our next guest. And I'm delighted to say, joining us over Zoom from Italy, is Benetton scrum half and Italian international, Callum Brady. So Callum, thank you so much for giving us your time on the podcast. How's things with you, and how's life in Italy? Because I guess it would have been very strange going to another country to begin with, but with everything that's gone on with COVID, I guess settling down in a new situation, is it even tougher?
Yeah, hello guys. Firstly, pleasure to be on the podcast. And yeah, no, it was an interesting time to move abroad, especially with, like you said, all this gone on and COVID, etc. So yeah, it's been, I think probably the toughest thing for me is the lack of the ability to go home. Sure, I drove over with a car full of stuff and the dogs end of June. I haven't been able to return home since. So yes, it's been tough in terms of just the complete change of scenery, change of lifestyle. It's been good. Like, as soon as I arrived, we were thrown straight into pre-season and stuff. So yeah, no, it's been an enjoyable start.
Yeah, I know you mentioned there, Callum, that it's been really tough for you to not being able to go home at the moment. But I guess, you know, when you are going to training and you're linking up with the boys, did they help you settle quite quickly in Italy? Because I know there's quite a lot of English-speaking lads in the squad as well.
Yeah, for sure. I was very grateful that I knew quite a few of the boys in terms of, you know, Tommy Allen, Seb Negri, Jamie Hayward, boys like that from camp in Italy, along with the Italians. But even the boys that I didn't know, welcome me in straight away. So no, I'm very grateful for the reception I received and the help as well. The team manager here, Benetton, has, you know, helped find a house as soon as possible and get a few admin bits sorted, which took their time, but he helped with that. So yeah, the things like that that just you don't really think about, take their toll, and to get them sorted is definitely beneficial.
Yeah, I guess you're excited as well, Callum, to get all the family over. And I know your partner Abby's expecting another child as well. So is it an exciting time for you as well as a challenging one as well?
Yeah, both. We've got our second child on the way, start of April. So yeah, they spent a bit of time out here again. they did move out here full time, but with being in camp and the new arrival coming, she's had to go home on occasions for midwife appointments and things like that. So they've been back and forth a wee bit, and with me being in camp, they again went home to spend time with family while I wasn't here. So it's been if I'm honest, it's just a complete change of lifestyle for us. You know, we had quite an outdoors lifestyle at home with the dogs and the horses, and we had a micro pig. So life was very different when we came here, but one that we're trying to get used to. And again, with me being in and out of camp and things like that, hopefully soon enough we can spend a consistent period of time here together.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, Callum. And I mean, how tough was the decision initially to move over to Italy? I know obviously international aspirations probably played a big part in that, but you know, you said there that you had a great lifestyle back in around the Gloucester area, you know, in terms of the rugby itself, you know, over 100 appearances for the club, 6 years, if I'm right in saying. So was it a tough decision, but also in the same sort of way, an easy decision for you to make because you did have those international aspirations with Italy?
Yeah, for sure. At the time, I felt like the decision was made from a career and an international point of view. I felt like Benetton was the right option from a personal development point of view, the way that they play. And I kind of felt like I was kind of losing myself a bit at Gloucester, if I will, in terms of getting bogged down a wee bit, being a bit too structured, losing my ability to play how I wanted to play, a bit more naturally, with a bit more freedom. So yeah, I felt like at that point in time it was the right decision, and it, again, combined with being here and being closer to the Italian players, the federation, picking up the language would only help me on an international point of view.
Can you teach us any words or any phrases in Italian? This can be the podcast title, if you like.
Oh my gosh, none that should be repeated. Yeah, no, not off the top of my head. I just know rugby lingo to start off with, so working on day-to-day skills.
And did you know any Italian before you went out there, Callum, or have you had to kind of learn on the job a little bit as well?
Yeah, learn on the job. Again, it was one of those that me and Jake Pledger took some lessons together just before the World Cup. And it's one of those, like, I learned way more just being in camp and surrounding myself with, you know, with people speaking Italian all the time, with coaches taking meetings in Italian, obviously sessions being in Italian. So yeah, it was tough to do lessons before I came out because you kind of do that once a week for an hour and then you forget it, where when you're in amongst it day to day, it's much easier to pick it up and you're on top of it. So yeah, I didn't know really a single word when I first got called into the Italian squad, and then gradually picking more and more up. So trying.
Yeah, and it's great to sort of hear you saying you were learning alongside Jake. And I mean, it seems to be a running theme, and it seems to crop up in a lot of articles at the moment when we talk about international rugby, Callum. Is this link that it seemed with Hartbury? I mean, a lot of you lads have come out of what seems to be the magic factory, which I've seen. I think it was someone in the Telegraph wrote, but you've got yourselves and Jake and Seb, obviously, in the Italian squad, but they're always dotted around Wales and England. So what makes that place so special to produce talent like yourself and everybody else?
Honestly, it's hard to put your finger on it. I went to Hartbury for sixth form, and I was actually at school at Colston's in Bristol, and the Alan Martinovic was at Colston's at the time, and he kind of approached me when I was in year 10 and said, look, I'm moving up to a college in Gloucester called Hartbury, and it's basically a rugby institute. You should have a look around and see what you think. And at that point in time, I hadn't heard of it. I still had a year left of GCSEs. And I went up and had a look around. And if you've ever been, you'll know what a fantastic environment and setting it is. So it was a no-brainer for me at that point in time. And I don't know why so many people have gone there. Certainly when I was there, before I was there, when I was looking around, there was Dan Robson, Brian Mills, Gareth Evans. Those three kind of stuck out to me, and they were kind of dominating the college game at the time. And yeah, I guess I sort of saw them and saw the direction that they were starting to take and wanted to kind of replicate that, if you will. And then, yeah, as I joined, we had some good players in my year. And yeah, kind of since then, just been producing talent on talent. I guess once you see players progress from there, you,
they kind of become the advert for the college. So yeah, the more players they produce, the more they encourage to go, and just keeps on rolling, I guess.
Yeah, because Seb Negri, who's a columnist for us on Talking Rugby Union, Callum, he's massively, you know, of course, he's going to be passionate about Hartbury, but he said sort of the environment there helped him make a decision to go move into Benetton because it was so close knit. Everyone seemed to get on with each other. Everyone sort of respected each other's values. And I guess when you arrived at Benetton, did you kind of see that as well a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, from the point of view of Seb, he's like a committed professional and like one of the kindest people out there, to be honest. You know, he's got proper family morals, and yeah, he kind of obviously learned that growing up, but then learned how to become a professional. Obviously, he went there for university, so he was a bit later to the game than a lot of us that went there for college. But yeah, obviously it put me in great stead going from there to Benetton and proving what a top quality player he is.
G'day guys, it's Brad Shields here. I'm a Loose Heads ambassador. You're listening to a Loose Heads podcast. Mental health is just as important as physical health.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about sort of the family morals there as well, Callum. And I know you're a big family man, and me and Rob were having a bit of a chat yesterday when we were putting the running order together. And he said that you guys did a blog, I think, right a few years ago for Loose Heads, and it talked about your upbringing and how your dad got you into rugby. And it seems, just looking at your Instagram, that you're trying to do the same with Buddy, if that's right, just trying to get him involved in the game as much as you can.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, my personal upbringing, yeah, my dad was as big a part as he could have been. Took me to the local rugby club at age of 5 and kind of was involved heavily ever since, coaching our age group team. And yeah, I wouldn't be where I am today without him, that's for sure. And very grateful for that. And with Buddy, yeah, I guess whether he plays rugby or not, I'm just trying to be as present as possible with him and help him develop as many skills as possible. You know, we had horses and we tried to encourage him to get involved with them as an option, and with the rugby ball, football, whatever it is, yeah, allow him to develop and be as diverse as possible. I think that was another thing growing up. I felt that playing more sports helped me from a rugby point of view as well. You know, I love cricket. I played a lot of hockey, played a bit of squash, and I guess I just want to give Buddy the opportunity to find out what makes him as happy as possible. Obviously, he's still young and he's nowhere near playing sport yet, but just from a development point of view, yeah, give him as much opportunity to grow and develop.
Something that we're pushing at the moment on our sort of Movember campaign is a video series that's going up on our socials. And one of the questions we asked the video participants is, who's your man hero and why? Every person apart from one selected their dad, and I'd say that, you know, my dad's probably my hero as well. But would you say your dad is your man hero, and why is that?
Yeah, definitely. I think to be a hero, they've got to impact and influence your life heavily, and that's definitely what he's done from a sport point of view, but yeah, from a family point of view as well. Again, he was involved heavily with sport with me, but it was more the day-to-day presence in my life, you know? That's kind of the thing that, yeah, resonates with me, I guess.
Yeah, and as fatherhood, Callum, sort of maybe, and not broaden your horizons, I don't think that's probably the right term, but have you taken a different outlook on life, you know, since Buddy came into your life, and obviously Abby's expecting a second child as well? Have you kind of taken a step back and thought a little bit differently about things potentially?
Definitely. Yeah, I guess maybe before before I was very much rugby orientated, and that was kind of the be all and end all. But now, yeah, I've definitely realised that there's way more to life, and actually he is more important. He is the most important thing to me. So making sure that I'm the best father possible is fundamental. And yeah, like before that, I remember speaking to Abby, my wife, years ago. She used to say, if I was pregnant and there was a World Cup final or there was a normal game of rugby, would you play? And kind of always would have chosen rugby. And then now it's kind of flipped. I just feel that they are the most important thing. Obviously, I love rugby and it's my job and I'm very, very passionate about it. But being the best father I can is the key for me now.
Is there a particular point in time or particular moment that made you kind of see that thing, that in reverse, and sort of change those priorities?
Oh, that's a great question. No, I can't think of anything specifically. I guess just seeing the pregnancy develop and grow with Buddy, and realised how much it actually meant to me, really. And then obviously once he came, and the first part of his life was, I wasn't really around because he was born 3 weeks before I went to pre-season with Italy for the World Cup. So kind of spent the first 4 months of his life, I was basically around for 3 or 4 weeks for the first 4 months of his life. And yeah, it kind of made me realise, although the World Cup was arguably my personal favourite achievement so far in my career, it's also a moment where I felt like, is it the right thing? I was kind of missing the early days with Buddy, and yeah, I definitely had moments where I was thinking, maybe I'm not around, and maybe is this the right thing? So maybe those thoughts probably impacted it a wee bit. But yeah, looking back, and I wouldn't change it for the world. You know, I achieved something that I set out that I wanted to achieve growing up, and something that I aspired to do. But yeah, it definitely makes you question, or makes you realise what's really important to you. And they're both important, and I probably didn't realise how important being a father was before.
It's probably something that people don't really consider as much sort of with rugby players, because everyone thinks, I want to be a rugby player, it must be the best job in the world. But missing out on those moments, I know it's something Joe Marler talked quite extensively about in his book, about kind of going off with England and the difficulty of leaving his wife and his kids behind. And just how difficult is it kind of knowing that you could be halfway across the world for 6-8 weeks and, you know, your wife's there having to look after a young child, and you're obviously missing out on those stages of life.
Yeah, again, it's a great point. It's one of those that you feel guilty for thinking you want to be with your family, because, you know, my whole life I grew up wanting to be a professional rugby player, and so many people do, and it's such a privilege and something that I'm very grateful that I do. But yeah, like you said, I think I've spent something like 6 months away from Buddy in his life, and he's only 16, 17 months old. So I spent like a third to a half of his life away. It's although, you know, doing what I do, I love, it comes with its challenges. And I think sometimes people overlook that because, yeah, I'm a professional athlete and I should be proud and privileged to do what I do, but it doesn't make missing your family any easier. It's part and parcel of what I do, but yeah, like I said, it does come with its challenges and down moments. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, must be really tough, actually. It's hard to imagine. I guess it probably opens up potentially a bit of a wider conversation about whether rugby kind of helps provide that balance for, you know, professional players. Obviously, you've got young men and women who, you know, train during the week, at weekends they're playing, they might go on a summer tour, they're away for weeks at a time, and then they're straight into the club season, and it doesn't leave an awful lot of time either for being there with your kids, with your wife and family, or even just kind of doing things that a lot of us take for granted. So going to the pub with your mates on a Saturday. Do you think there's kind of a conversation to be had around whether rugby provides enough time for that, or is that just one of the sacrifices you make being a professional?
I guess it is one of the sacrifices you make. Again, probably the biggest thing for me is not to feel pressure, that I feel bad for wanting to spend time with my family. Like, I feel like if I were to say that I miss my family, people would judge me for that and think, he doesn't want to play rugby, or he doesn't enjoy what he does because he wants to be with his family. And it's not that at all. It's, you know, I'm as committed to playing rugby as I ever have been. And yeah, I guess that's probably the biggest thing, is just opening people's minds to we are humans, and we do love our family, and we do want to spend time with our family, and it's not a bad thing that we miss our family. It's part of life, isn't it? The biggest thing is just not to be judged. I'm not saying that I am judged, but I certainly feel like if I was to be open and honest, then people could perceive that as me not wanting to play rugby and not being committed, and that's definitely not the case.
And running parallel to that then, Callum, is that kind of one of the reasons potentially that you got involved with the guys at Looseheads? Because I guess you want to break down those stigmas and tackle those stigmas, which the guys have said that if people do feel, you know, a bit lonely and want to talk about things, they can do without being judged, as you say. And is that one of the main reasons why you're such an avid supporter of the guys?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, when I first saw, they're kind of the first people that I saw open the topic for conversation, really, in terms of, the things you've just touched on. I guess the biggest thing for me in terms of, but there's lots of things that I think about when it comes to mental health, but one of the biggest things is people feel pressure to behave or think in certain ways to conform with society. And I just feel that the more we talk about mental health and the more we encourage people to talk about their feelings, then we can help stop people conform to society in the way that we're supposed to feel. That's kind of the way I see it anyway.
And do you think it's a topic, Callum, that is getting talked about a lot more, especially within rugby? Since I've started doing this podcast, it's become more apparent to me that it is a situation which people are wanting and willing to talk about a lot more. But I guess when you breathe rugby day in, day out, you'll be able to see it a little bit more clearly.
Oh, definitely. I think rugby specifically is traditionally a man's game, and mental health apparently is a sign of weakness in men. I don't know. That's the way that it's been perceived for years, or people will definitely think about it for however many years. And that was definitely evident in rugby. And I think although the topic or the mindset is shifting, I still definitely think that there are a lot of players or a lot of men that still think that it is weak to feel down or show a vulnerable side or be honest. And it's not the case. I think the more that we can be there for one another, and that's in rugby and in society, we're all going through tough times at the moment with all that's happening in the world. And I think the more that we can be there for each other, show positivity in the world, the better. If we're more positive with each other, we'll encourage each other to be more open with one another. And that's kind of it. If we're going to sit around and judge, then people are going to continue to keep things to themselves, and then things boil up. And we know the stats when it comes to mental health and suicide and things like that. So I think as a society, rugby and Looseheads is definitely trying to shift the momentum and be more positive and open the conversation and allow people to be themselves. That's ultimately it. I don't want anybody to feel pressured to behave or think a certain way. The work that Looseheads are doing, and if we can all do our bit and help encourage people, then that'd be good.
Al was one of the first guys who got involved with the Looseheads journey right at the start, and if it wasn't for support from the players who got involved right at the start, I don't think we'd have been able to grow like we did and have. Ever since he got on board, he's been brilliant at showing support. You heard him talk there just about how important it is to him, opening up the conversation in rugby, joining in with the Looseheads Team November attempt, you can see. But, we want to be everywhere and anywhere, and we don't shy away from admitting that. So hopefully, Cal can start spreading the word in Italy as well and just keep tackling the stigma.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely.
And just endorsing that, Chris, you asked the question to Cal, but when we started this crusade, if you like, or movement, as we probably should call it, one thing I've been deeply humbled by and completely blown away by is the way in which some top flight players have just given up their time and their energies and their attentions to us to try and make a difference. And no more so than Cal. He's been absolutely wonderful for the Looseheads movement. And do you know what? We say internally, and we probably should say externally more, that why are we doing this? Well, one of our whys is that we want to stop one person from going to the euphemistic suspension bridge to end it all. And the reality is, if someone like Callum Brayley can say, guys, it's not a sign of weakness. It's okay to talk. It's okay to be not okay. Then that might save a life or many lives. And that's the critical nature of it. So from us at Looseheads and from all those people that we don't even know if we've helped, thank you.
And I guess as well, Mark, just on that, when we were doing a bit of a prep for the podcast, Rob mentioned that Callum had done an interview with Rugby World. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, when a player does an interview for a high-profile publication like Rugby World, it is going to be starting about the rugby, talking about the rugby, talking about Italy, talking about Benetton. The first two questions, which were in the interview, were based on Looseheads. And I think for me, that's, you know, I think it's fantastic to see that an interview can start with that now. And maybe, I don't know, a year or two ago, but that would never have got a mention.
And moreover, absolutely. And moreover, three of my close mates contacted me yesterday to say, I read the article about Callum Braley. Wow, I didn't realise you know, how do you... And their question to me privately was, how do you go about getting these ambassadors? If only they knew that it's just the most natural thing in the world, then they'd realise that's... And in one word, that's called rugbiness. And Callum talking about Colston School, a place I know quite well in Bristol, and moving to Hartbury, and, you know, he's got rugbiness in bucket loads. And long may it continue.
Thank you. Just to go on the back of that, Mike, in terms of your friends being surprised at how you get ambassadors, that kind of comes back to the point that people are surprised that we'd be open to talk about mental health. And that is the wider issue, isn't it? We need more people to be less surprised that we can be open and honest. And then the movement will definitely be shifting.
And I hope, you know, me, a 53-year-old broken nose veteran, who never gets called up by the vets anymore. Me talking about it openly might help one person, but let's be honest, Callum Braley talking about it makes it ever more come to life.
Hi guys, I'm Amber Reed and I'm a Looseheads ambassador, and you're listening to the Looseheads podcast. Remember that mental health is a journey, not a destination.
Yeah, because it was great. It was great reading that interview, Callum, and obviously the Looseheads stuff is the most important thing, but a couple of interesting things in there as well. A couple of superstitions that you have when it comes to rugby. Is it, obviously it's true, but left sock first and then right sock first? Touch talk.
Yeah. Again, I wasn't never into superstitions, and then just kind of, it was, became a habit really. And now it's, yeah, become a superstition. But left sock, right sock, left boot, right boot, left lace, right lace. Not something that I'm particularly proud of. It's just kind of just a habit that I've fallen into really.
And 40 plus trainers as well was in the article as well.
That's a lot of lace.
Yeah.
That's a lot of left foot first, right foot second.
Yeah. I'll be honest, it's probably way more than 40. quite a lot more than 40. But I've always been into trainers ever since I was a little boy. So trainers and rugby boots, just something I've always been into. So it's a bit strange, but that's the way it is.
And one more thing, and a big One Direction fan too.
yeah. Again, I found their music positive, uplifting. And yeah, I guess when I first said to people that I like One Direction, it was people like whatever the saying would be. And I was like, you know what? I like their music. It's uplifting. It makes me feel good. I don't think there's anything wrong with it.
I can now imagine, Callum, when Abby gets back over to Italy, her wardrobe is going to be full of your trainers and the soundtrack's going to be One Direction when she comes into the house.
Yeah, well, her wardrobe is really full of my trainers. And One Direction will be on. I'll make sure.
And one thing Rob mentioned to me as well, Dalmatian boots. I mean, that shows absolute dedication to the love for the family there.
You know what? I saw the boots and I've got two of the most wonderful dogs. Obviously, in my opinion, everyone loves their own dogs. I just saw the boots and thought, why not? I feel like now is a good time for me to be, again, going back to my mindset, trying to be a bit more free and not conform. again, this is a weird one, kind of off topic, but my mindset over the last few years, if you look at my headshots from like when I first broke onto the scene, very serious, and kind of as I've got older and older, kind of graduated to a smile, and that's kind of been a representation of my mindset, was I need to behave and be a certain way, and say the certain things, and yeah, act in a certain way, really. And my mindset is starting to shift to kind of be a bit more myself, and yeah, I guess getting some boots like this with the way they are is different. And yeah, I'm just trying to kind of be a bit more of myself and not feel the need to conform to a model that I kind of made up in my own head.
You find it helps you both on and off the field, being able to be a bit more relaxed like that and enjoy yourself more and play a bit of 1D in the changing room before and after games?
Definitely. I think when you don't feel like you can be yourself and you're not positive with yourself, it drags you down, doesn't it? You're not honest with yourself, not honest with people around you. You carry burdens, and yeah, you just feel gloomy, really. I'm not saying that I felt gloomy for years or anything like that. I'm just saying that being more honest with myself and being more positive has definitely helped the way that my outlook on life. I think having Buddy has helped that. Because yeah, I think how I'd like him to feel. And then I kind of thought about that myself and how I should make myself feel. So yeah, kind of combination of all those things.
And has that mindset helped you, Callum, from when you first kind of stepped into the Italy camp? Because I guess for any player going into their first international camp, it's always going to be nervous. But we've seen how rapid your rise has been, going, like you said, going to the World Cup, playing in these fantastic arenas, St. James's Park, with that warm-up game before then, and obviously playing in Japan, but then going into sort of France and Wales matches as well. So has your mindset changed in that short period of time from when you first went into the Italy camp?
Yeah, definitely. Again, I actually think, if I'm honest, being in those scenarios is kind of, I realised that I wasn't maybe myself or wasn't as positive and confident as I should have been. And yeah, I kind of missed enjoying those opportunities as much as possible. And, you know, the next time I get the opportunity to play international rugby, I'll definitely make sure that I'm more confident, more positive, and just seize the moment. I know that's like cringy to some, but definitely something that I'm trying to do more and more, just be present, be in the moment, and yeah, enjoy that.
Yeah, because people in terms of, if they don't know Callum's background in terms of why he's playing for Italy, obviously people may see, Callum, that you represented England in the 20s, had some brilliant success with them. But I was reading a quote yesterday that you said, you know, the balance was always there between Italy or England. You always wanted to play international rugby, and Italy gave you that opportunity. And so when you talk about seize the moment, it's an absolutely apt phrase to use, because that's exactly what they've done with you. And I guess you're wanting to do that with them next time you take the field.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's something that, yeah, like you said, I knew that I had two avenues to play international rugby. I always aspired to play international rugby. And when Conor O'Shea called me to invite me over to camp, it was a no-brainer for me that they showed faith in me, and something that I couldn't turn down, and something I definitely wanted to be a part of. I still very ambitious with Italy. I know some results haven't gone our way recently in recent years, but you know, the group's as ambitious as ever, and you know, we're determined to get some success on the field and really change the momentum for the country and from a rugby point of view. So yeah, the next time, you know, it's definitely going to be a case of just seize the moment and enjoy it.
Because I was going to come on to sort of Italy and the here and now, Callum, and as you say, the results haven't gone your way, but I guess just looking at that performance the boys put in against Scotland at the start of the Autumn Nations Cup, that is exactly sort of the positives you can take from that. And this is a young group, isn't it, that Franco is trying to build, and it seems to be an exciting place to be at the moment, where from the outside people go, oh, it's just Italy again, but it seems to be quite exciting within the camp.
Yeah, definitely. I think there is obviously a lot of judgment from the outside world. Classic judgment. But yeah, you know, we've got a young group. Franco's really trying hard to blood the young players, and we're excited to be on a journey and do our best to turn the momentum and move forward. So the boys are determined and hungry to
to do that. And like I said, the performance against Scotland was a pleasing one in terms of the attitude again against England in the first half. The attitude and determination that the boys showed is what we can use to kind of catalyse what we're going to do. So we've got some good framework and some good building blocks. We just need to build on them and take confidence.
In that international setting, Callum, you are a consummate and top of the game performer at the English Premiership, and that's proven. What for us mere mortals who watch it, you know, in the autumn and January, February, March for internationals, just how big a step up and how electrifyingly quicker is it?
It's a good question. Thanks for the compliment. That's very nice. It is a massive step up. Can't deny that. It's hard to kind of put your finger on what specifically. I guess the speed of the game, the physicality is definitely higher. But if I'm honest, the Premiership is probably the closest league. Not that I've played in every league in the world, but is probably the closest league to international rugby from a game plan point of view. You know, the way teams defend is probably the most similar to international rugby. The lack of space. There obviously is different, but with the physicality and the speed of the game. But yeah, the Prem definitely lends itself closer to international rugby, I'd say.
It strikes me that you're absolutely right. People will watch a game and then they become world authorities. And the reality of life is we have the strongest opinions sometimes about those things that we understand the least about. So all those armchair experts can say kind of what they want, but then when you look at, I watched very closely the France game recently, and not Italy, France, can't remember who they played. And Wales. When you just focus on one team, and I was focusing in just on their colossal front five. They're all huge, and they're careering into people. They're just physically withstanding that for 20 minutes is a feat in itself, let alone trying to get the ball out of a ruck and pass it to somebody.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, France at the moment are dominating physically and kind of getting themselves on the front foot. Obviously, yeah. Anton Dupont is one of the best nines in the world right now and on absolute fire. But again, he's playing behind one of the most dominant packs at the moment in the Northern Hemisphere. So it's creating the opportunities for him and the rest of the backs with France. So, yeah, winning the front five, the forward battle, getting on the front foot, dominating set piece is massive in any rugby, let alone international rugby.
And how was that sort of coming up against Dupont, Callum, in the Six Nations, which seems ages ago now? That must have been, you know, you must have sort of realised there in that moment potentially that it was quite a rapid rise for you, sort of going to the World Cup, going into the Six Nations. But you must have been like, wow, here we are, Stade de France against Anton Dupont. It must have been a special moment.
Yeah, definitely. Again, it's probably a moment that probably didn't capture at the time fully, and was probably more of a passenger in the game than I would have liked looking back on it. Looking at the way he plays, he's as involved in the game as anyone. And he was a great player to play against and actually see what he does. And to try and replicate that is something to do moving forward.
And I guess as well, there might be a little bit of frustration in the Italy group at the moment, Callum, because of that performance you're putting against Scotland. Obviously, the next Autumn Nations Cup game has been called off because of COVID-19 reasons. But I guess the guys would have been itching to play. And what was your... Would you have been potentially involved this weekend? Because I know you missed the England game as well with protocols.
So to be honest, at the moment, after I had quite a serious head knock against Ireland... And missed the England game due to not being fit after that. And then since then, kind of just been looking to get games with Benetton. I haven't really played much since lockdown, since literally the last game. Played Wasps for Gloucester when we were supposed to play Ireland in the Six Nations. So that's kind of the last game that I've properly played. And with the Pro 14, the way the league returned was tough. And, yeah, so basically haven't played much since then. So Franco just felt that after the head knock, it's a good opportunity for me to get some game time with Benetton and get some confidence back, really. So yeah, like I don't actually know when I'll be back into camp. They're obviously playing well at the moment, and they want to play Stephen Varney, and I'm just looking forward to being involved whenever that is, and yeah, looking forward to playing with Benetton. We've had some difficult results, and yeah, I'm excited to again turn that around for Benetton and be part of a comeback in some capacities. So again, going back to my mindset, I would have let things like that bother me in the past and overthought scenarios and yeah, came up with 15 different solutions. But now I'm kind of thinking, all right, I'm at Benetton and I want to be as good as I can be for Benetton, and that's my focus. And I've always thought that is just a saying, and people say that but don't fully believe it. But yeah, I'm definitely looking at that and actioning that at the moment.
Yeah, definitely, Callum. And one thing that has weirdly been a reoccurring theme when we've done these podcasts is getting Liverpool fans on. You are the latest in a long line, Callum. I was going to say, ever fancy pulling on the boots for our team at the moment, because God, we need some players.
I mean, I'm a long, long, long way off that.
I don't think so now, Callum.
Centre back.
Seb Negri sent me a funny meme earlier, to be fair, asking about Jurgen Klopp. I don't know if anyone's seen it. Jurgen Klopp asking Shaqiri to play centre back, and it's the video of Sam Thompson and Zara McDermott having an argument. We're short on players, that's for sure. But we'll be good. We'll be good.
Hi guys, I'm Sam James. I'm a Loose Heads ambassador, and you're listening to the Loose Heads podcast. Make your mental health a priority.
The interesting, you talk about the overthinking thing, and blokes are masters of overthinking, aren't we, in life? However, you can never overthink a Mars 15. There's my contention for the life. Here's the basic premise. The Martians have landed there, have no idea that coronavirus is a thing at all, and they quite fancy living on Earth. So they've found the powers that be, probably not our orange friend from over the pond, and they've challenged the Earth to a game of rugby to decide the future of civilization and who owns Earth. We've lost the toss, sadly. We did rock, paper, scissors. And on Saturday, we leave in a supercharged shuttle that takes a month to get to Mars for one game only. So there it is. Any era, any gender, any player. Callum Braley, who is your Mars 15?
Now, first is, like you said, you can't overthink it. Yeah, I mean, you definitely can. It's a tough one. Are the aliens, are they big and physical? Are they quick? It was a tough one. I kind of went for a bit of a mixed 15, really. So Loose Head went for Jason Leonard, someone that I watched growing up and thought a lot of. When it comes to hooker, again, it was a toss-up between two current hookers for New Zealand, Dane Coles, Cody Taylor, but I think I'm going to have to go with Dane Coles. Okay. Tight head, gone for John Afoa. And then in the second rows, Martin Johnson and Whitelock. Again, back row, kind of not really gone for a ball carrier, which maybe I should have, to be honest. I've got George Smith, Lewis Moody and Kieran Reid in the back row. Hopefully we'll turn over some ball and play a wide, expansive game.
In your days at Gloucester, Callum, I looking on from afar and being one of those world authorities on Gloucester, I've always felt that they've had the potential of having the best back row in the league. When Ross Moriarty was there, who's just a human wrecking ball, I always thought, born and bred in my hometown, but Welsh to the core, and Jake Ledry, who just seems to punch above his weight. But strangely, the combinations in that 6-7-8 never really gelled. You know, Ben Morgan as well, I throw into that mix.
To be honest, the chatter about Gloucester is an interesting one from a player point of view. We've had some
pretty good young players with a lot of talent. You know, like Elliot Stook, Johnny Hill, two second rows there at Gloucester that you know have really flourished since moving on. And yeah, with the back row, Ross and Jake and obviously Morgs and Lewis Ludlow at the moment is playing well. And yeah, they've had loads and loads of talent in that position. So yeah, it's a weird one how they haven't managed to keep them together and play together and get that continuity as a club in that position. But something that I'll definitely be looking at moving forward, I'd say.
Yeah. Sorry, I digress, because the most important selection you've got to make is your position.
Yeah, so at halfback, I've gone for Aaron Smith. I just think the nuts and bolts of his game are the best in the world. There's a lot of very good nines at the moment in the world, but for me, his chat, his organisation, his core skills are by far the best. His error count is probably the lowest. I think there's a lot of nine. Again, don't want to go off topic too much, but there's a lot of nines at the moment, in my opinion, that you know make a lot of errors. But the one or two good things that they do, they get a lot of credit for. So I just went for someone that his all-round game is the best, in my opinion, in the world.
And he seems to have that. It's an un-New Zealand-like quality, I think, where he's got quite a high, shrieky voice, and you can hear it, and he just bosses people about.
Definitely, you can definitely hear him when you watch any game he plays. You can hear him on the ref mic, literally for the whole time he's on. And
yeah,
that again is part of why he's, in my opinion, the best nine to ever play the game. At 10, obviously growing up in England, it's got to be Johnny Wilkinson.
Yeah.
And then on the wings, I've gone for Jonah Lomu and Jason Robinson. And then, in my opinion, again, this whole team's my opinion, but the best centre partnership to play the game was Nonu and Conrad Smith. Combination of physicality and speed and distribution, was pretty awesome. And then, despite the conflict, if you will, around him, I think Israel Folau has got the most ability at fullback.
Totally agree. Israel Folau, crikey. Yeah. On his day, was a proper game.
Yeah. Frightening. Again, it's really tough to do World 15 because you're comparing players from different eras and like, the game is completely different to what it was 5 years ago, let alone 10, 15, 20 years ago. So, yeah, it's hard to do because you didn't see a lot of players playing against blitz defences, you know, I don't know, 7, 8 years ago, it was predominantly drift defences. So the game was very different. And the speed and the power of players is developed tremendously, I'd say, from watching it when I was younger. So it's hard to compare players from different eras.
Before you select your backroom staff, who out of that illustrious team, and there's quite a few candidates, would be captain?
Probably Martin Johnson, isn't it?
Yeah. He usually gets the nod, but yeah.
Yeah. It's a tough one. I find captaincy a hard one to choose without fully knowing them, to be honest. Because again, it comes back to a judgment that you don't really have an informed decision on. But he was the captain when England won the World Cup. So
yeah,
he must have been fairly good. So should I do backroom staff?
Yeah, please. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, being a Liverpool fan and the way that he motivates his players, his positivity and his smile, he's got to be Jurgen Klopp as coach. Then Waterboy, again, I felt like we needed some comedy for the long flight. So I went for Waterboy's Ricky Gervais. Kitman, purely because he's one of the best that I've worked with, is Sean Bullock, the Gloucester Kitman. Again, not a celebrity or anything, but he's going to do his job and he's going to do it very, very well. And then team manager, feel like he would be organised to the point and motivational, is Barack Obama.
Oh, topical. Launched a book, didn't he, today?
Yeah, really? Yeah, I didn't know that. But so, yeah, that's my Mars 15.
Interesting, isn't it, that quite a lot of players pick kit men that they've worked with?
Yeah.
We've had quite a few pick Pudsey at Wasps, but yeah.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting.
Yeah.
They must do a good job.
Well, yeah, obviously, in my opinion, I've worked with some good kit men. But yeah, Sean's a man, to be fair.
I can't allow a Gloucester stalwart like you to not ask this question.
Okay.
Rob knows this question quite well. So one of the most gifted players I've ever seen close up and personal was Tom Hudson. For me, is as a young lad, had all those things that great sportsmen have. He had time and he had space. And when he didn't have time and space, he created time and space. And to not see him playing is a tragedy. But whenever I speak to him, which is too infrequently, he's always level-headed about it. And it's always like his best time is to come.
Yeah.
And I just wanted you to comment on Tom and that ability.
Yeah, to be honest, he came into Gloucester after a couple of years out. He retired from Leicester quite young. He had a serious groin injury or a couple of injuries that kind of ruled him out. And he had the opportunity to come back to Gloucester after finding some full fitness. And yeah, he seized the opportunity. He impressed everyone as soon as he started training with us. And like you said, he has time and space and understanding of the game. Never looks flustered. Yeah, all those qualities that top quality players has, he's definitely had. You know, he's had a couple of injuries that haven't helped him. But every time he's played for Gloucester, I think he's proved how good a player he is and beats defenders when he doesn't look like he would.
Yeah.
But yeah, his mindset and his humbleness isn't a word, but he's so humble. Yeah, I probably can't really speak highly enough of him with people probably not understanding him fully because they wouldn't have seen a huge amount of him. But he's definitely one of the more talented players that you'd see close up, that's for sure. So yeah, I hope for his sake that, you know, his best times are ahead of him. He works hard and he deserves some reward, that's for sure.
Yeah, his Mars 15 with Charlie Beckett, we were speaking to Callum before we press record. His is one to absolutely listen to. So go back through the Loose Heads podcast list and listen to Tom and Charlie's, because it really is a fascinating team that they selected. And one thing, Mark, that I wanted to just ask you, your permission, because it is your Mars 15. Would we allow mascots for Callum's team? Because I'm guessing, Callum, the micro pig might be the mascot for your visit to Mars.
Yeah.
Yeah, he would be. He would be.
That would frighten the Martians.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Well, Callum, it's been fantastic to get you on the podcast. Thank you for being so open and honest about sort of your life in Italy and obviously all the stuff you're doing with Loose Heads. And I think I echo what Mark and Dave and Rob have spoken about. It's been, you know, I think you would a credit to Loose Heads, and I think the guys really appreciate sort of all the work you do for them. So and we appreciate you having on the podcast this afternoon. So thanks for your time, Callum.
No, thank you very much. And yeah, again, thanks to all of you for opening the topic for conversation and encouraging people to be themselves. That's awesome. Keep up the good work.
You're listening to the Loose Heads podcast. Join the movement.
Let's get people talking about mental health.
And together we will tackle the stigma. This is the Loose Heads podcast.